With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey hustlers, we know that this 2024, the entrepreneurial journey is filled with challenges. An often overlooked aspect is the time-consuming task of processing payroll and managing government requirements. And did you know that the average admin spends a whopping 50 hours per month dealing with just government compliance? That's time you could be spending on growing your business, or let's be honest, taking a well-deserved break. But fear not, we got a game changer for you, introducing Sprout Solutions and their tailored solutions for MSMEs called the Payroll Starter. With Sprout Solutions Payroll Starter, you can finally reclaim your time and get your life back on track. Say goodbye to the stress of remembering tax dates or worrying about missed payroll runs. This bundle is designed to make your life easier and your business more efficient. And here's the best part. The cost starts just at 5,000 pesos per month for businesses with up to 10 employees. Yep, you heard that right. That's just 5,000 pesos per month. So why spend another minute drowning in payroll paperwork when Sprout can revolutionize the way you manage your payroll and government requirements? Take the first step towards a more efficient business today. Visit sprout.ph/payrollstartermonthly5k. If you missed that, don't worry. We have it in the description box of this episode, so click that too. And again, big shout out to Sprout Solutions because your time is too valuable to be spent on paperwork. Reclaim it with their Payroll Starter. Now let's begin this episode.
The Hustle Share podcast is brought to you by PDAX. PDAX is a homegrown cryptocurrency exchange that offers the best rates among local cryptocurrency exchanges. Download the PDAX app now on the Google Play Store, App Store, or Huawei App Gallery. Start trading Bitcoin, Ethereum, and other cryptocurrencies for as low as 50 pesos by signing up on podlink.co/hustleshare PDAX. Also powered by PodMachine, the simplest way to grow and edit your podcast. Sign up now at podmachine.com and use the code HustleShare to get one free edit.
I think that those people who make it big, I believe, are actually outliers. And I think a lot of people are not perfect and they need a bit of time to grow. And that's certainly my story.
Welcome to HustleShare, the podcast that features the daily grinds of unique hustlers around the world to show not our differences, but that our hustles are very much alike. Now here is your host, Ronster Baityong.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Hustle Share Podcast. We got the guys that just got funded, but not just one, not two, not three, but $13 million. On a pre-A, and the metaverse is alive and well, my guys. So again, without further ado, let's welcome to the show Ian Estrada and Herbie Fu of XLD Finance.
Thanks so much, Ron.
Thanks so much, Ron,
for having us. Super excited.
Thank you so much. I've been bugging you for a while now, Ian.
Right.
To come on the show because everybody's talking about, like, I always ask this, like, I'll be very straightforward. I'm a little naive on the metaverse. And I always ask my friends that have been here on the show, so, you know, who's got next? Who's the next big thing? And they said there's only one. It's XLD. So I've been knocking on the damn doors for a while now. And finally, you guys are here, Ian and Herbie. But I want to ask you, before we get carried away, the million-dollar question. Sorry, it's just a million. Ian and Herbie, what's your hustle?
Yeah, so XLD Finance, basically, what we're attempting to do is to make sure that build basically financial tools that feel like it's a bank or bank-like financial tools delivered via crypto in emerging markets. So we really gotten inspired by the play to earn movement last, where you can see that playing using crypto and participating in play to earn or Web3 gaming, that you could that it had a direct financial impact to their lives. Unfortunately, when we were looking at like options and how people were doing off ramps meaning turning your crypto to like fiat or using it to pay for stuff, there's so many steps, right? So you have to, from your like Axie Infinity, yep, was so many steps. Number one, and then they had their own basically side chain. So you have to bring it from Ronin to MetaMask. You pay gas fees, which are basically transaction fees, MetaMask to Binance, transaction fees, and then peer to peer, right? And there's just so many steps, and basically there is. I think it really just gets in the way of crypto being used in real life, and the things that they have in their crypto wallet, the tokens that they have real value, and it's very important for us for users, regardless if they're play to earn, to actually be able to use it pretty much immediately. Now, back then we were focusing on off ramps, but kind of our vision and remit has greatly expanded. We're actually building a lot of APIs. So we have a payments API product that people can use to pay directly to merchants with crypto. We have a fiat off-ramp, which basically you can send your tokens to your like financial account and receive fiat for them. We have a mass disbursement tool. So anyone who wants to pay their team in stable coins, in less than 5 minutes, they can start dispersing to thousands of people in wallet addresses. We're building a merchant acquiring. So basically something like to use the example in the Philippines, like the GCash, the QR codes and things like that, to make sure that it's available. People can use their crypto in brick and mortar and even e-commerce or online businesses. They can use it and many more along the way. So I think that's what we do. Yeah.
That is so cool. And again, that's where I think it's where the next jump would be. The usage for a common average Joe, for them to be able to earn or whatever that might be and whatever coin they're using, and to actually use it for real life goods. Now, before I get carried away, Herbie and Ian, I need you to buckle up, because we're going to have to ride the Hustle Share time machine. All right. I know this is not alien to you. You guys are super futuristic. You guys got time machines. I think you're going. Are you guys literally going to Conquest today or yesterday?
We were there yesterday.
Oh, wow. I knew it. Everybody was there. Like, you. Shout out to the Akad Arena guys. Like, hey, are you coming to Conquest? Like, I didn't get an invite. I don't even know what I'm going to do there. But yeah, amazing stuff. But I need to ask you first your origin story, just like any superhero. And you guys are doing something super heroic. I'll start with Herbie real quick, because Ian has been telling me, like, you got to talk to this guy. He has an interesting thing. But walk us through your journey so far of how you got into the startup and tech industry, and what are the first few steps you took to get into the ecosystem?
Hi, I'm Herbie. So I started my crypto journey in like last cycle in 2017 when I was studying MIT back then. You know, that year, you know, like you probably, like some of the guys might have heard about, you know, the crypto like ICO bubble from the last cycle. I was one of the, you know, like a few kids, you know, like, you know, back in the days in school, like jumped to the crypto wave during that time. So basically that year, myself together with some few like classmates, we dropped out of school to start our very first, you know, crypto fund called A-Decimal Capital back in the days. And then, you know, we got lucky because, you know, in the last cycle, there's like even weaker like a fundamental for the market. So it actually means like, you know, the primary market, you know, the crypto VC, you know, landscape is like way less competitive than what we are nowadays. So literally, you know, like you get a chance, you know, to early invest into like Solana, into like Chainlink, into, you know, Avalanche and a few others. You know, it's all open opportunities. And then, you know, so basically we made our very first fortune through, you know, like the ICO wave in the last cycle. And during the deep bear market, you know, we decided not to continue our crypto like venture business, but rather, you know, like so basically I went back to the family office side, getting to like more traditional like web to, you know, growth equity investment, and also some of the fund investment as well, and got lucky, also like LP'd a few pretty like top tier crypto VCs, you know, nowadays. Then it comes to like last year. So basically to a lot of my good friends coming from Hong Kong and Japan, they were asking, you know, hey, Herbie, like we wanted to like, you know, open up this like a crypto venture under our main fund. Do you feel like, you know, like working with us to manage the crypto book? I was like, okay, why now? Because I've been like always like, you know, like doing like a, you know, personal like crypto investment like since, you know, ever. So then we started this, you know, like Infinity Ventures Crypto together with Infinity Ventures people coming from Japan. They were like one of the biggest, you know, traditional like Japanese VC there. And I got lucky to meet Ian through Gabby, the founder of YGG. You know, we invest into like the earlier round, and I feel, you know, like because I'm born and raised in China, I experienced, you know, this like very interesting like absolute change, like the paradigm shift of people of payment infrastructure, you know, like people like, you know, like coming like from like direct cash to direct mobile. With the rising of the, you know, Chinese like internet industry. So I kind of sense, you know, like similar things might be actually happening to a lot of, you know, like the emerging markets down the road. Just like, you know, us like skipping like the credit card. And I feel, you know, like Ian, like a very strong, you know, CEO. I always tell people that I cannot be the CEO. I like product. I like strategy, and I'm really bad at, you know, managing people. So we, you know, work as a pretty good team together since then, and you know that's, you know, the story.
Now, but well, one last question before we go to Ian's origin story, because we go a little bit way back, a couple of years back. But I want to understand from coming from a VC LP standpoint, where you're actually sourcing out deals to look for the right, you know, deals to invest in, or like founders, right projects or right startups that you're looking for. What was it with Ian and the XLD team that made you want to literally join the ship and build product and, you know, contribute more than just resources?
A few things. So, you know, generally, I always tell like my friends, my people that there are like three very important qualities that I'm looking at when I'm reviewing a startup. So first of all, whether, you know, like the founding team, whether they are like resilient enough, you know, through our conversation, past experiences. And then the second piece comes to, you know, whether the team is like product driven enough. In crypto, especially in crypto, like it's actually quite easy to pivot as long as you have like strong enough, you know, like product set. You can always grab the opportunities when the market, you know, comes, when the opportunity comes. And then the third point is that whether, you know, like the team is like presentable enough. So, you know, luckily like Ian is pretty resilient. He knows, you know, what he's building, and then, you know, he's quite presentable with his
personality. There you go. In other words, in Filipino, he's foggy. I don't know if you know what that means.
Oh no.
Foggy is good looking. No, there you go.
Herbie's more good looking than
there me. You go. I didn't know. So if you're not foggy, don't even try crypto, guys. That's it. That's the third. That's the third component. All right. Now, Ian, let's talk about your journey. Again, you've been around for a while, and I'm literally at your LinkedIn as well. Right. But walk me through your first few stints. I don't think we have time, but you had a very amazing journey. You started getting into like tech through Globe all the way to GCash, and then you joined Cashalo, and even became a VC for a while under JG Dev, right? But walk us through that journey so far that you've gotten through.
Right. Actually, my first job, believe it or not, was in real estate. I was the member of a two-person team acquiring land across the nation. It was actually with the PhilInvest group, so the Gutianon's side. And it was super, I started that, it's super interesting. And really, when I started my career, I've always wanted to work on these massive projects and major builds and be able to affect company-wide strategy at the big level. I think also when I was younger in the university side, I was enamored by the idea of being at a McKinsey or a BCG, so a top-tier consulting firm. But unfortunately, my grades weren't high enough, and I don't think I was. My skills, interviewing skills, were super good. I'd never get invited for an interview because they only ask 5 people out of all of the schools, right, who have Latin honors, and I certainly didn't have that. And they only select 1 person usually, right, per firm per year here. So for me, that wouldn't happen. But I was thankful enough because I was in land acquisition. You actually go through the entire process. So the site planning, financial modeling, negotiating with the owners, and then contracts to make sure the payment schedule is aligned with the titling schedule, the due diligence stuff to make sure there's nothing obstructing the purchase or there are no claims against titles. And then I said, I think I can do this. So I was able to acquire probably more than ₱1 billion worth of properties. Yeah, back then, my first job. And then, but I felt like I didn't feel like real estate was my thing, actually. And I felt like I wanted a more, an industry that was more expansive. And thankfully, I was recruited by Globe. Actually, I'm not sure if you know Xavier Marzan, who's now the Chief Innovations Officer of the Gutianon Group, of PhilInvest Group. Ironically, hired me away from the group that he's working for now. Exactly. And for me, I think just the Globe journey, I worked in the strategy team there, and it was a very exciting time where we were basically, you know, we were trying to figure out how we can actually grow our business, because the market share there was like 67% smart and 33% smart. And then we were just trying to find alternative revenue streams. So I was thankful enough to have been able to go through almost all, or pretty much all, like telco related businesses. So from the entire consumer group, I had some projects and stints across there. I did a bit of enterprise and I did a bit of small to medium business. And when I left, and my last project in Globe actually was, I led their enterprise-wide digital transformation initiative called Project DNA, where we were mapping out what do we want their customer experience to be in 5 years, and what's the capability roadmap that we need to deliver. So me working with a team of external consultants, and that was my project where I worked with Ms. Pick on that. Moved on, John Rubio, who's now the country director of Facebook, recruited me for BPI Globanco. I fell in love with it. Unfortunately, we had to, the Globe side and the BPI side split ourselves, and we moved on to join GCash. On GCash, I won't spend a lot of time there, but I won't spend a lot of time talking about it. But my biggest product there is actually GCredit. So GCredit is what I designed and launched that with my team. And I think it's probably, from a user perspective, probably the largest lending product, because everyone with a GCash has a GCredit score. I moved on from I was recruited by the Gohongwei Group. I was initially assigned at Cashalo. I was I designed some of the first few products. And even I remember I also created, like in 2018, I was pushing that, hey, I think we should do some sort of credit line earned buy now, pay later. I was pushing that since 2018. And I actually looked at my slides. I was saying, shop now, pay later, because we were talking to the Lazadas and the Shopees and said, no, I think that's the way we'll need to go through it, because e-commerce is going to be like massive. And unfortunately, they didn't prioritize that. But then after I did my few stints there, I did go to JG Dev. I was the founding CEO. He set up or at least launched their first fund. It was a 50 million fund, deployed a bit of that. And then now I'm here. I guess whenever I would tell my story to people and what I really focus on. So I'm really a person I'm a product professional with experience in mass consumer products, with a love for financial inclusion and inclusive finance. So that's my background. Yeah.
That's amazing. And again, just doubling down on what Herbie said, just with that that experience alone, that just gives you the ultimate edge that you've done this before. And just couple that you're pogi. Oh my God, this is gonna be this is gonna be a killer team. All right, now let's take our first break, and when we come back, we will now talk about how you guys created XLD. All right, and how you raise funds, and you know, what are you gonna do very soon? We'll talk about that more after the break.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey guys, I have a very, very exciting opportunity I want to share with you guys. If you're a B2B startup founder, listen up. Your ticket to growth is here. Introducing Impact 24, the Philippines' largest B2B SaaS challenge. Calling all startups in their pre-launch, pre-seed, or seed stages, this is your chance to accelerate their growth. Submit your pitch to Impact 24 and get ready for a 10-week intensive program to elevate your solution. What's in it for you? How about up to 500,000 pesos in MVP project support, exclusive credits from industry partners, personalized mentoring, and a shot to pitch at SaaSCon PH, the country's biggest SaaS conference this April. But yo, you gotta hurry up because submissions close on January 26, 2024 already. Don't miss out on this opportunity to take your startup to new heights. Apply now at saaschallenge.ph. That's saaschallenge.ph. And good luck, and I'll see you guys in Impact 24. And we're back in the break. We are still with Herbie and Ian again, who then talked about how their origin stories as superheroes of the metaverse started out. But now let's talk about XLD. So again, you guys are, again, amazing what you've guys done prior to XLD. But Ian, I'll start with you. When did it start? When did the itch start? Because again, you were doing really well building product. You were even doing a VC work. But when did you start feeling it like, oh my God, I got to do some. Like, I want to be a founder. And how did that turn into XLD?
Actually, believe it or not, I've always wanted to be a founder throughout my entire career. But I do think that providentially, I needed to go through my own personal journey to be equipped with the skills that I have. Like, humbly, if I didn't go through my corporate experience and then being able to work with a diverse set of people and great mentors, Herbie probably, given the number of deals that he's seen, he probably wouldn't have paid me that much attention. So I think we glorify sometimes 21, 22, 23-year-olds getting into the startup, making it big. But I think that those people who make it big, I believe, are actually outliers. And I think a lot of people are not perfect and they need a bit of time to grow. And that's certainly my story. Now, the itch, for me, I was like, throughout my career, the funny thing is I only applied for a job once. And then whenever I would move, people would ask me to move, right? And the offers, and I was fortunate enough to be like, when people would come, they'd basically say, how much do you want? And things like that. And I felt that kind of as a person, because I'm a simple guy. Okay, this is not bad money, right? And it kind of like, maybe I'll delay what I want to do, right? But I've always taken the approach that for every stint, I'm just preparing for the eventual time that I'm going to be building something, right? And the opportunity actually came post the pandemic. Actually, after JG Dev, I actually I actually resigned there. And then I set up my own kind of digital consulting firm, which kind of started really, really great, because I think just my background, whenever I talked to the enterprises that needed help, they instantly liked what I was offering and what my background was. And then unfortunately, the pandemic hit, right? And it kind of like a lot of my contracts basically back then dried up, because a lot of a company spends on innovation, usually in good days. And when it was pandemic, there's a lot of uncertainty. They wanted to keep as much cash in their balance sheet to make sure that they can continue to pay their employees and not close shop. So I think that's a reasonable thing. And I think, yeah, through that process, having a bit more time, I started getting into meme stocks, which is the GME. Yeah, Wall Street Bets meme stocks. So the GameStop, AMC, that thing like in 2020s. And in 2020, and then I was starting to participate. Funnily, I made some money in meme stocks. Yeah, yeah. And then being human beings, right? Okay, where can I? Okay, I think the meme stocks are dying down. What's the next thing to do? All right, so crypto, right? So we looked at crypto, and through my kind of crypto exploring, I started getting to see like Play to Earn was, got connected to like certain people, like my first few investors. And it was really just exploring like, what can we do? What can I do to actually help these Play to Earn guys? And then that's when I met my first few investors who introduced me to Gabby. Gabby invested at her seed round back then. And then basically I just started getting to work. The company, with the company actually built our first product after 2 months of foundation with four engineers. And I was basically the product manager. So we have this payments product. We basically were able to, like in a very short amount of time, in 2 months, be able to hook up to like more than 100 billers and then test it out in 2 months. Yeah, in 2 months. And then the thing is, when I was sitting with the team and we were testing it before we could launch it, it was on the Ethereum mainnet. So it was, and back then it was like August. And that was really the growth of Play to Earn, right? In July, YGG raised, and then Axie Infinity was just like going up and up on the up and up. It was so expensive. It's like for a 250 peso, like a $5 payment, the gas fees would be like $60. So I said, holy crap, we need to make this multi-chain. We need to make this compatible with Binance Smart Chain, Polygon. We need to support more billers, blah, blah, blah. So we took some time to actually do that. Yeah, so basically that's how we started, right? It's a very small and scrappy team working over time. And yeah, and I think by the time when Herbie was talking to us, I was ready with the demo already. Like, here's how it works. And they were impressed by what we were able to do in such a very short time. Yeah.
That's amazing. Now, Herbie, I wanted to ask you. So yeah, you saw this version of the MVP. They did it pretty fast, had a solid team. But how did you decide to come in and just take it up a notch? Because again, that's what you said. You always look for product people, because, you know, in Web3 or any type of Web2 that actually scales, you can't be a service, right? It has to be product driven, and it needs to be product led growth. What did you guys do when you start and you decided to come in to really, you know, make this bigger than what it will ever be?
If you really like a look at the narrative, you know, for crypto or just, you know, Bitcoin specifically, the original narrative is actually, it was supposed to be like a P2P e-wallet, P2P e-money. Instead of, you know, like, you know, nowadays, like people more treating this like a digital gold, right? People having been, you know, shouting about, you know, like a crypto could be, you know, like the new financial rail, you know, for the unbanked people. But this dream has never been really like fulfilled. Yes. And I've seen like a quite a few, you know, like, you know, startups, you know, working towards this direction, but, you know, especially for a lot of very, you know, like US based, you know, whether like stablecoin projects, crypto payment projects. But the problem is that, you know, like oftentimes those teams, they have pretty solid product, they have pretty good technology, but the problem is that the team's not local enough. You don't really solve like an emerging market problem without having, you know, on-site team in the market with all your CEO, with all your CTO, you know, product manager, in the United States, in California.
It's basically skin in the game that to really understand the problem at a local and, again, personal level.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, I see, like, you know, Ian, you know, and he's like, a, you know, first team, you know, they're pretty good, you know, like a local market, like knowledge about the local market. And combining myself, you know, I know, you know, crypto, the technologies, you know, itself.
Perfect. But I'm very curious about the structure because, again, you have XLD and it's primarily originating from the Philippines. But prior to recording, Ian, you discussed how, yes, this is you founded by a Filipino, but you are not a Filipino company. And how, talk to me how that works, because I've seen this happen also with like YGG, with Gabby. Yes, he is a Filipino founder, but he has a very global team that allows you to get this done, because the talent also is very scarce and it's hard to find to get to this level. Talk to us about how that works.
Yeah, no. So in crypto, in traditional startups and in financial services, it's a lot of the institutions and companies are very, let's say, country or geographic based, right? Like you, when you acquire a license, it's only a license to operate in the Philippines. And if you are if you want to set up an entity, if you're an Indonesian and you want to start up a startup in Vietnam, you have to go to the Vietnam SEC and get a license or basically authorization to set up a corporation. And in Web3, it really doesn't work that way, right? Because basically the foundational unit of Web3 is really just your wallet address, just an address on the chain, right? So that's one of the things. And once you have that wallet, you use that basically with different types of protocols, and you build towards that. So a lot of Web3, even if it looks fancy, it's really basically just having one wallet interact with another wallet in general. Herbie can provide more nuance on this, but like philosophically, it's just multiple wallets. And that's where the space where XLD operates, right? So like, for example, stablecoins, while they are minted, or at least the company running it, for example, Circle, so one of our investors, USDC, is based in the US. Basically, their stablecoins are accepted in any protocol anywhere in the world, because in the chain and the blockchain, like, geography doesn't matter, right? If you have an address, then great. That's all that's really, you know, super necessary. So we're actually supported by a very global team. We're now close to 70 people actually sitting in 11 countries. And yeah, and it's a very interesting mix of people who are or more crypto oriented, which is Herbie, and people who have real world financial services experience or traditional startups experience, right? But for me, I've been really setting up a team and having that kind of mindset. It was really freeing. It wasn't bound by having to find my team members in the Philippines. So just to share about my team, I think I'm super happy with the team that I was able to put together. So my CFO, Christian, actually is a 15-year banking veteran. He used to be the COO of Barclays Corporate Bank, who is in charge of Middle East and Asia Pacific. Super proud of that. My marketing person actually was the marketing head of the Sinarmas Group. So Sinarmas Group is like a huge conglomerate, and she was handling that and went from 0 to 2 million users in a span of 2 months. She's Indonesian. My head of payments actually, you know, has built 3 wallets and integrated with, you know, national retail payment systems, numerous payment aggregators. And you know, at one point in time, not sure if you, I think he was responsible for the first version of the Grab app in the Philippines also, but he's Filipino, right? And then obviously we have Herbie. So I do think that that's something that's super important, right? For us to have the right type of people in the team. And we really shouldn't be thinking about it just if it's from the Philippines, because the best talent is out there. In the same way that if I was being recruited, it shouldn't matter that I'm in the Philippines, right? And I believe that I can compete with the best of them globally. So that's really my approach to hiring. Talent can come from everywhere. And I'm super happy that in the Web3 space, there's no borders, right? There's no borders here. Yeah.
No, but a couple of things. I'm very curious because, again, everybody wants that talent, but not everybody can afford that talent, right? I want to now talk about how you also were able to get the raise, the 13, because I'm pretty sure that didn't come overnight. Like, oh, here you go, 13 million. You said it's oversubscribed, and I think you probably said no to a lot more people. But before we talk about that, what were the hardest parts? Because I'm pretty sure before we even talk about getting talent, before we even talk about, you know, getting traction, there were sacrifices that needed to be made and some hurdles that needed to be overcome. What were those things? Because it's not all fun and games. It's what we see now is the finished product. But before that, there's a lot of pain. What were those like?
Yeah, so I think Herbie should really talk to you about the raise and the challenge of that, because he was it was really Herbie's a crazy guy when it comes to that. But I think on my side, on the founder and operating side, the hardest thing was that if you're a startup and you're working with very limited resources, a lot of it is basically, it's a lot of time investment and emotional investment. Because I remember last year, and I only had four engineers, and I didn't have a finance team, I didn't have an HR team, I didn't have anyone else. So I was the product manager and the chief everything officer, right? So CEO, chief everything officer. So it was a lot of grinding. I had to be the one very, and I'm super detail oriented. I'm product manager by trade. It takes a lot of time working with engineers, making sure you keep them accountable and they deliver. And then there's also a lot of emotional investment, because when people are working like 12 to 16 hour days just to deliver something, and then I'm in the middle of raising funds. I was making good traction on my seed round. But people would still feel, is this worth it? Is XLB, is this vision going to be, is this going to work, right? So I had to make sure that, first of all, I'm able to win their hearts over and let them stay along. And if I promise you, dude, like, knowing what I see 6 months later, bro, you're going to be so happy that you stayed, right? Because I can't lose an engineer. When you have four engineers, I can't lose an engineer, because that's going to slow down my development path. I'm going to have to train them. They're going to have to keep up with the pace. They might get scared, because if the people who are on, they're so intense and so passionate, right? So yeah, shout out to Benj, Francis, Dennis, and Leo, the first four. That was really with me the journey, a fantastic four. So shout out to these guys that they were able to put it together. So I think that was really the first one. And then I would say that I think things started to change when I talked to Gabby, introduced me to IVC, and they really helped me a lot. And then when Herbie came in, that just took a lot more pressure on me, especially on the fundraising side, and helped me focus on just building something. Yeah, that's the struggle. It's really a lot of time. But I just want to warn people, and for me, this is an important principle. I don't glorify just the burnout culture, right? For me, I view it as there are things that we need to do at the business right now. And if we need to do 12 to 16 hours, we'll do it. But if we don't have to do 12 to 16 hours, I think we need to take some appropriate time and then work. So for me, I'm more of an advocate of, people say 9 to 5, 5 days a week. But I'm like more of 24/7 and take breaks in between, right? I'll just take breaks in between to make it sustainable. So for me, that's how I work. I don't glorify the culture of hard work. It's just if you have to do something.
No, it's a necessary thing, because you're being ambitious and you're trying to change the world. Right. And that's why it's important that you surround yourself with people that also are built with the same, same elements as you, because a lot of people won't do that. And what it takes sometimes is just one bad apple to completely change the dynamic of your whole team. If all of a sudden somebody's murmuring like, hey, why are we even working like this? Fuck this guy. He's a freaking exploiter. Right. Then that whole dynamic changes. But if you surround yourself with people that understand the grind, that believe in the vision, that will, you know, do whatever it takes to sacrifice so that down the road it normalizes, then it's worth it. But again, this is all hustle and hard work. But it ain't just going to get you there if you don't have the resources. So Herbie, what were the challenges to then bridge the gap? Because you have guys that are working 12, 16 hours a day, right? And again, you wanted to scale fast. You wanted to be able to go to market fast. And in order to do that, you need resources. On the fundraising side, what were those things that you guys had to overcome?
I think generally, I would say like our fundraising is actually pretty smooth. We know most of the, you know, our investors back in early days, and they share the same vision with us. Because you know, like we had some like a previous like fundraising. So you know, there's some restructure about the fundraising structure. And everything really like, you know, take some time.
Got it. So again, not easy and requires a lot of repetition and pushing through. Now let's take our last break. And when we come back, I just want to dive deeper on how to fundraise in crypto and what you guys are going to be doing with XLD now that you guys have it loaded up and ready to rock. But let's talk about that more after the break. Hey Hustlers, it's time to talk business once again, and we're excited to share a bit more info about our sponsor, Sprout Solutions. And again, just like what I said at the start of the episode, you should check out Sprout's Payroll Starter as you grow your own startup. Because this bundle that they have is literally what you need to take your startup to the next level as you grow your employees. And this bundle is your key to freedom, including payroll outsourcing to experts, a subscription to timekeeping and attendance software, and government compliance services. Sprout's Payroll Starter has you covered for payroll, BIR, SSS, and taxes. All the stuff that no founder loves to do. So let Sprout handle the busy work and say goodbye to lines and tax payment stress. All this for as low as 5,000 pesos. Again, that's just 5,000 pesos all in for your payroll and HR needs. So visit sprout.eh payroll-starter-monthly-5k, or again, just click the link in the description box of this episode to elevate your business management game. And again, big thank you to Sprout Solutions, liberating your time for what truly matters. Hey Hustlers, wish there was an easy way to open a bank account and grow your money without the hassle of lengthy application process and income documents? Well, I got good news, because today's sponsor, Uno Digital Bank, is here to help you achieve your financial goals. You can easily open an account with the Uno app in just 5 minutes and one valid ID. And as one of the 6 digital banks licensed by the Banco Central ng Pilipinas, the company is committed to providing customers with simpler, better, and more accessible banking. Last year, Uno Bank was recognized by the Asia Banking and Finance Awards and bagged the title Open Banking Initiative of the Year due to the success of its partnership with GCash, one of the Philippines' leading mobile wallet platforms. And with the Uno mobile app, you can access an hashtag Uno Ready Savings account and enjoy daily interest crediting. With their hashtag Uno Earn or hashtag Uno Boost Time Deposit accounts, you can enjoy a high interest rate of up to 6.5% per annum. Enjoy monthly payouts with hashtag Uno Earn in flexible tenors with hashtag Uno Boost. Other app features include pay bills, the Uno Virtual Debit MasterCard, life insurance, scan and pay with QRPH, and phones. And the one thing that I really love about Uno Digital Bank is they're open to collaborate with a lot of Filipino startups. I've had a chance to see the partnerships that they've had lined up with the startups that they have, and it's truly exciting to see how a digital bank like Uno can enable startups to unlock the power of fintech through digital banking. So if you're ready to elevate your banking experience, download the Uno mobile app today from the Google Play Store or App Store. Or if you want to collaborate with them, I'll be happy to give you an intro. Just shoot us an email at hello@huffleshare.com. Hey Hustlers, I hope you're having a great 2024 so far. As you know, a lot of startups had a very challenging 2023, and hopefully things are going to do better this year for a lot of us. Not just because it's the year of the dragon, but also because our sponsor, DragonPay, is here to help your startups process payments in the most efficient way. Established in 2010, DragonPay empowers businesses of all sizes to accept and disburse payments through secure and convenient channels, giving your customers the flexibility to choose the payment method that suits them best. With over 85 partner channels, 35,000 partner branches nationwide, including QRPH, e-wallets, crypto, buy now, pay later, and many more. They also process an astonishing 15 million transactions processed globally each month. DragonPay is your trusted choice for online payments. And here's something to show you how legit DragonPay is. DragonPay was named Fintech of the Year at last year's Philippine Fintech Festival in 2023. So let's make 2024 extra prosperous for you and your startup in this year of the dragon. For more details, head on over to dragonpay.ph. That's dragonpay.ph. Trust the pioneer. Trust DragonPay. And we're back in the break. We are still with Ian and Herbie. But Herbie, I'll go back to you first again. I know it's not easy to do that, and you got to get the right backers, and you know, have a little bit of back channeling, a little bit of FOMO in between when you're doing fundraising for any type of startup. But is there anything different when you're raising for a crypto startup, because, you know, or a Web3 startup now? Because again, totally different. And again, it's very nascent, but nascency can be a good thing. What's the different approach when you're raising for a Web3 or a crypto startup versus, say, a Web2 company?
You know how you get a product traction, you know, like it's because like getting the product traction in Web2 and Web3 is like absolutely different. That's one thing. And then, you know, you're going to know how you gather like the right resources, you know, having like what investors to be on the cap table and what kind of value they can bring to you. And so that you can leverage to get more funding, you know. It's the second important. Besides that, I'd say, you know, like generally, like crypto investors, they're easier to deal with than like
got it. Well, is there a different how does DD even work on Web3, right? Because again, traditional VCs like, what is DD? We'll have to look at your cap table, look at your P&L and your permits, and you're not even a local company. Is there something different in that?
Yeah, you want to speak about that?
Yeah, sure. I'm laughing because I have so many kind of internal stories about the fundraise, because like in Web3, yes, in general, what I've observed, especially for Web3, is it really depends on the macro. If it's the bull market, then you know, that people have a lot of money to spend, because, you know, it's just the right rising tide raises all boats. I mean, that's the reality. And Herbie knows this, right? A lot of their investment super did well during the bull market. But on my side, it is pretty straightforward. First of all, you know, the fundraising documents is what you call a staffed, right? I mean, on our side, it's basically a special agreement for future tokens. And it's very... And in general, it's a founder's market. Like they have, if we choose to kick you out and just refund you your funds, you can't do anything about it, right? So that's how kind of the industry works. And on my side, like my fastest investment was like a 15-minute Telegram chat. And then he said, okay, I'm going to put in money. And it wasn't a super large check because he was an angel, but like we just talked on Telegram, boom. All right, send me the SAV. You know, I'm in, let's do it. Right. So and one of the things that we did was so I think my fundraising story is raised the 1.5 million seed. I struggled to get my first 500K. I knew I needed more. So I was just fundraising. And then, you know, what happened was I raised like 250K more. And then people just started getting to know what I was doing. And then people wanted to actually invest more, and then finally I just increased it to like a total of 1.5 million. Funny story also with Herbie and Infinity Ventures Crypto was because I was already kind of over allocated, and we were talking. So I was pitching to them first 10 minutes. I told them, you know, Herbie's partner also in Infinity Ventures Crypto. Then he stops me and goes, "Okay, cool. I get what you're doing. How much can you give us?" "Oh, I can only give you 90K. And then Brian just goes, "Holy crap, Ian, that's not going to wake us up in the morning." And then for the next 30 minutes, he talks to me about what they're going to be doing and blah, blah, blah. And then Herbie, you know, what do you think of their model? And then I picked up a lot of things. So like, you know, I came out of that meeting generally like, okay, this guy, I think, knows the local industry. He's made some interesting investments into like some startups here. When Herbie super, I was just like so impressed with Herbie because when he was talking, I picked up like two to three things that I started to reflect on. And then I also asked Gabby, like, "Gabby, what do you think of IBC? Should I, they're asking for more than what I can give them. What should I do? Or do you think I should do it? Like, bro, Ian, worth it." So then I spent the night looking at the investor list, and then I had to adjust a lot of people to give them the allocation that they want. And they said, "Okay, all right, I'm happy. Come back. I can give you this amount of money." And then he said, all right, let's do it. And then that just came in. And that was when Herbie came in, basically, I was just head to the ground, you know, building product. Our fundraise actually for the 13 million, we remember Herbie, we were starting it at $6 million. We just said, we'll raise $6 million.
What?
And then that's like amazing. On a week-on-week basis, we would just like, can we get, there were some, the, like a couple of first few guys that we wanted. Can we take the whole round? And then Herbie obviously says, no, because we want more people to support you. You want people more on the journey. You want more branded folks in that journey, right? So basically, and then the funnier thing was, we actually raised money without the deck. And I remember during the fundraise, Herbie and I would be like, our deck sucks, Ian. Like, I know, but like, I can't spend too much time there. I'm trying to build something. So whenever we pitch, we don't use a deck. We just use a product demo. And then when they see the product demo, then we just show them it works. And then it's like super fast. And I can show them like, look, I just bought mobile top up, right? And I just received it. So when I show them that it really works, and then it's like magic and it's super efficient, like, all right, let's do it. So that's kind of the journey that we had. It wasn't super easy, right? Because we had our own problems. We were restructuring it. We were raising initially using a token, but then it made more sense for us to kind of have a hybrid equity and token model. So obviously things had to shift around, and I had to kind of have a mini roadshow to try to convince all of my previous investors that this was the best thing, better thing, because instead of tokens, you're getting blah blah blah. So it was a very challenging part, but you know, those are just the highlights of the fundraise. Yeah, certainly. Yeah,
got it. No, but again, I've never heard of this. This is wild. But I want to understand now. You can't be showing product just for the sake of showing product or MVP, right? There needs to be some real traction in there that makes people just like, you know what? Don't show me the deck. Don't show me anything else. I'm in. And I think a lot of that will have to come from also your GTM and how you got traction. Walk us through, because in Web3, the name of the game is community. How were you guys able to build that community pretty fast and get avid and rabid fans?
I think maybe Herbie, right? I think you can share more about this, but the journey that we've taken is a bit different. I think when we got this 13 million, we were absolutely clear that, you know, we were still kind of figuring out, or at least not really figuring out, we were building out our product stack because we wanted this, you know, this corner, this huge market in emerging economies to provide like, you know, financial infrastructure through crypto there. So we were absolutely clear we were continuing to build the product. But I think on our side, when people saw it, it was like magical, right? But how can you actually do that? Like buy airline tickets, like buy underwear from Shopee using crypto. And it was basically even people from the West, right? Twitter, when we launched our first product out in the market called Xpend in January this year, people were posting that, hey, I bought an airline ticket. And then people from the West were saying, that's not true, you can't do that. And then the community was just saying, no, you can do that. And when people saw that we it wasn't us just saying that we will do this, it's like we've done it, right? We've proved we can do it. We have, you know, we were able to do it. I think that's when they saw like, all right, I think these guys are up to, you know, are up to something. And I think me as a founder, if I could just give tips right to anyone who's listening, I think one of the things that also other people kind of saw in me was I knew that I am a steward of their money. I don't view it as like kind of, I take the money, you know, yay, I'm going to be, you know, do more stuff. I was a lender for the longest time for my whole fintech life. And I'm very particular about, you know, cost structure. I'm very particular about making sure that, you know, it's very sustainable and, you know, you're calibrating things all the time to make sure. So they felt like, you know, I was an adult at least, so that they can, you know, trust me with funds, even if I didn't have a deck. So I think that's how I would say what drove our fundraise primarily, because if you're not familiar with Web3, it's super hard to bridge the real world and crypto. And there's a big chasm, right? It's easy to bring in money because of the credit card stuff. But for if you want to do it like directly beyond credit cards, it's super hard. It's super hard. Yeah.
But Herbie, any other few anecdotes that you can share of how you got to 13M? Because again, I'm pretty sure you had to say no to a lot of people that wanted more and whatnot. Because again, coming from a VC standpoint, when you see a winner, you want it all. How do you guys balance that out, making sure that, you know, there's enough room for people that added value to make sure that, you know, you get the right people on the cap table and they're happy with the allocation that they got?
That's actually the beauty of crypto, you know, fundraising. So generally, I would say like people are more collaborative than a VC. Also because, you know, like oftentimes, you know, frankly speaking, for a lot of crypto projects, fundraising is sometimes, you know, like a pre-product, pre-demo, you know, fundraising or just like with a product demo, like ourselves. So that, you know, people becoming like the crypto funds becoming like more collaborative, you know, they contribute in like different like aspects to have this like a joint force to work together to help the project.
That's amazing. All right. Now, what about the features? So you guys built products, you have an amazing team, you have resources to get done, but we're just getting started. What are you guys building out soon and what should people look out for in the things? Or if there are already, there's already products out there, what are those and what can they do with that?
Yeah, no. So for on our side, we would be, I think the best way to see where our products are will be in our Twitter. So it's at XLB Finance. But basically, we're building a set of APIs so that all crypto projects and major protocols can actually use infrastructure to strengthen their proposition, right? To make sure that as part of their ecosystem, let's say you're like a major exchange, you can actually use, be able to connect to, you know, thousands of merchants globally in Southeast Asia and Latin America, Middle East, and Africa, instead of really just penetrating, going through those markets and payment partners on a one-by-one basis, which is super hard to do. And there's regulatory stuff that you also need to contend with. So we're building those suite of APIs. We have a payments API. We have a fiat off-ramp where you send your crypto to your bank account API. We have a mass disbursement product. Right now it's GUI based, but we're working on an API approach so that you can, you know, in just a few, one transaction authorization, you can send it. The experience is the same for disbursing 5 people or, you know, 10,000 people. We're building a merchant product that allows people to pay with crypto in their favorite tier one e-commerce site. Like Lazada or Shopee, Tokopedia, et cetera, as well as, you know, their, you know, separate storefronts, like people who are using Shopify, right? Being able to do that. We're building a couple more, and those products are actually shipping in a few weeks. So all of them are shipping in a few weeks at the same time, yeah. Our team is like, we're at the team of 70 people, more than half are engineers. And the rest, and then up to like 80% of the company are either former engineers or people who are not engineers, but like technically inclined like myself. So we're really a product driven, like super product and engineering driven team. Yeah.
That is crazy. And again, thank you very much, Ian and Herbie. But before I let you go, again, if they want to reach out to you, where do they go and how do they do that?
Yeah. So I think on my side, they can reach out to me on Twitter. So it's at Ian Lives Crypto. You know, I'm pretty active there. So that's the best place to reach me.
How about you, Herbie? Where do they go if they want
to? Yeah, I mean, feel free to, you know, DM me on Twitter as well. It's Herbie Fu.
At Herbie Fu. All right. And again, before I let you go, follow us on whatever podcast app you're listening to, whether it's Apple Podcast, Spotify, or whatever. And again, if we did have some jargon, which I did, we did, it's going to be the show notes on HustleShare.com. And lastly, if you want to be part of the HustleShare community, it's going to be the HustleShare community on Facebook. Again, Herbie and Ian, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ron. Happy to be here.
Thank you.
All right. And I'll see you guys in the next episode. Peace.